It's Friday, which means it's time for the Political Power Hour on Point Taken, where the left and right go head-to-head on this week's top stories and issues. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bride.
I say yes. What say you? For the second week in a row, Jake Curtis from the Institute for Reforming Government fills in for the vacationing Bill McCosion.
I think McCosion's here in the footsteps a little bit.
Yeah. Jake getting a little brand going. awesome hat, by the way. Brewers 250. Love that thing, man. Red, white,
yeah,
and blue.
Yeah, I just picked it up. Father's Day present.
Nice. That's a great Father's Day present. Joseph Heck, you can't give him any less attention. How are you doing?
Fantastic. Happy to be here.
You look great. Your hair's a little poofy today. So Kristen Bry is always alongside.
Always has poofy hair.
He does.
I mean me.
Well, you have the wavy hair, yes. Okay. The other day in our podcast, not to get too far off base, I mistakenly called her hair black instead of brown, and she like chastised me right away.
Hey, speaking of that podcast, we got a exciting podcast coming next week.
Oh, yeah. Let's tease that a little bit.
Yeah, we're gonna have a 250 reflection between Bill, Joe, Steve, and I.
Should we all wear red, white, and blue?
Sure.
I think we should, yeah.
Sure, and, and if Jake continues his trajectory, maybe by the 300th, maybe he'll be in the McCosion chair.
There you go.
All right, where are we starting today, Kristen?
We are starting with the housing bill that passed this week with a crazy, like an embarrassing amount of bipartisan support. So it was 85-5 in the Senate and 358-32 in the House. It's titled the 21st Century Road to Housing Act. And it seeks to increase housing supply. We can get into, if we want, the nitty gritty of what parts of this will actually help housing and what won't. But the bigger news then was, despite this bipartisan support, President Trump said that he will not sign it until Congress passes the Save America Act, which we have talked about a lot. And there was a lot of frustration from Republicans that Trump is holding this up. Now, I don't really know, because if he doesn't sign it within 10 days and he also doesn't veto it, does it just pass?
Well, they haven't sent it to him yet. I think Johnson now said he would send it to him. But I've sat here week after week and talked about a rough political environment for Republicans and said, and the problem is they're stuck because Trump is who he is. This is what I was talking about, people, right? Like any common sense attached to reality leader of a political party who sees a midterm approaching and goes, boy, the optics and the environment aren't really good. We should try to put some points on the board. We should try to give members of my party something to go to the American people and say, look, we're delivering. And if you let us continue to run Washington, we will deliver for you. And they try that with legislation that everybody wants, right? Everybody is concerned about housing, right, left, and center. And they pass it in this overwhelmingly bipartisan fashion. And Trump goes, absolutely not. What? This is not political super strategy. This is political suicide, in my view.
All right. That's a Democrat speaking. Jake, what do you think?
Well, we're going to get into this, so I guess I won't go too far down this road. But, political suicide also could be viewed as essentially electing, I think there were 30 Democratic socialists throughout this year that have won primaries. I mean, the Democratic Party is going hard left.
They're not elected yet. Republicans run Washington right now.
Yeah, I understand, Joe. Like my point is, this was an unforced error, I think, on the part of the Trump administration, absolutely. Because as we have polled at IRG, housing affordability is a huge issue. I think one of the, you asked specifically, Kristen, about, what's something positive in here. Regulations here in Wisconsin. I know you guys have had on County Executive Shulman from Washington County, who has pointed out if you look at new home construction, about maybe 20-30% of that is a result of regulations that probably can be eliminated or streamlined. Mm-hmm. And I know there was some regulatory reform in this package. Missed opportunity. Kristen, to your point, if it just sits on the president's desk for 10 days and he doesn't veto it, it becomes law. But Joe, I would agree to your point about kind of the optics. Like this was a victory lap that the administration needed to take because, again, affordability is a key issue. That being said, and again, I know we'll get into this in detail, the Democrats have a problem in that, this party is going hard left And I think they're going to have to answer for some of the positions that these Democratic candidates that have gotten through the primary have taken over the last 6 months.
I can't wait to show you how easy that is later in the show.
Oh, yeah, we are going to talk. We are going to talk about that later.
But on the housing piece, so like the other problem, the other reason that Trump is stuck, right, is that any other party leader, Bush, Obama, Clinton, Reagan, they would walk into a lunch with Republicans on Capitol Hill, and they'd say something like, "Hey, we got to keep control of Congress. If you want me to come campaign for you, I will. You want me to come campaign for your opponent? I will. If you need to beat me with a verbal brick bat to win your race, do that." But this president is incapable of allowing anyone in his own party to create any distance, even if it helps them politically.
I agree with both of you guys, because it is an unforced error by the Trump administration, and this president just steps over everybody and anything. This, when you have 85% in the Senate, are you serious? That's a slam dunk, no brainer. Where's my pen? I mean, why is that hard for the president?
I agree, but I cannot wait to get to the kind of the socialist bent of this party.
Like, trust me, we talk about reasonable democratic positions.
The defense is you have no defense of this.
Yeah, it was a missed opportunity. But it's going to pass.
I don't know where it goes from here. I mean, the real question is, with how many times he is pushing the SAVE Act, what is the likelihood that this gets passed before the midterms?
Zero.
SAVE Act.
The votes aren't there in the Senate.
It does not appear that the votes are there. But it isn't a, I mean, I know we may disagree on this. I think it's an important reform. I mean, 2 years ago, 70-30, Wisconsinites passed the amendment that citizens only should be allowed to vote in Wisconsin elections. I mean, there are parts of the SAVE Act, and I know you have some concerns with others, but there are parts that have overwhelming support. The problem
there, there are parts. I can see that there's a parts of it that are, like, especially voter ID is wildly
Maybe we should
popular.
Focus on the parts that have overwhelming support. Maybe that's the way we should govern. All right, let's take a break. Kristen, Steve, Jake, Joe, Friday panel. Welcome your comments, 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited, WTMJ Talk and Text Line. Lots more to get to. We'll do it after this on 620 WTMJ. We are off and running on a Friday edition of the Point Taken Show. Thanks for listening, as always. You miss any or all of our program, or this program, which is always a good listen. Great listen, I might add. Find it on the podcast page at WTMJ.com. It is the best listen. Yeah, don't forget, don't sleep on our podcast. It's new up over time, now up on our platforms, and it is a great one. And we'll be talking about some of that a little bit later in the show, the 250th.
I made the entire room laugh at the end of this podcast.
Did, yeah.
It's a tease. Yeah. Go listen to it.
It's a good tease. All right. Where are we going next?
Regime change.
Yes.
The new book. All right. So we've talked about a little bit on this show. Steve, you said it just got delivered to your doorstep.
This morning.
Joe, you are 100 pages in, but this is the new book by New York Times journalist David Swan and
Jonathan Swan
and Maggie Haberman. Basically, a collection of a year-ish?
It's the first year of the Trump presidency.
Of how Trump has approached this, especially compared to his first term. And, Joe, you have lots of thoughts. I mean, I've heard some excerpts already that are fairly shocking as far as a lot of it having to do with the risks he is willing to take to have a legacy.
Yeah, it's a nice look, and probably a fair look, I think, of the evolution between first-term Trump, sort of Trump in exile, and what he did with that time to prepare for Trump 2.0. This is very, for anybody who doesn't know this style of book, this is very much like a Bob Woodward book where, I mean, and Woodward's got, what, 30 at this point? It started with All the President's Men, but from Clinton and Bush and first-term Trump, these Washington tales of an inside the White House expose. And by virtue of doing it as a book, they get sources to give them stuff on deep background that they know they won't read about in the paper the next day. But it helps, you know, give a early indicator of history. And where I quibble with the authors is, like, they say this is a first draft of history. No, it's not. Daily reporting is the first draft. These relatively recent exposés are the second draft of history. And it is very well sourced. It is at a tempo that Woodward, I think, got worse at. You know, he did a lot of color about, hey, Stephen Miller, and then there's three pages about Stephen Miller's background. We know who Stephen Miller is. It keeps moving, so it's well-written. It's a fast read. And there are some things that we knew about that are sort of recontextualized, and there are some things that we didn't know about that should be concerning to folks. And then there's some stuff that's, like, honestly pretty trivial that I don't think I needed to know. I don't need to know.
Well, it's a book. You got to flesh. You got to flesh things out.
But it doesn't advance anything to know that Donald Trump, you know, staff found like empty potato chip and snack wrappers in his bedroom.
He's messy.
Like, who cares? That doesn't. I'm not interested in that. But I'm curious, like, based on the excerpts or, you know, what you're hoping to get out of it, I can answer questions about the first 110 pages at least.
The whole thing about, look, books and, you know, daily reporting are completely different things. Mm-hmm. If anyone's arguing that Haberman's not tough enough on Donald Trump, they don't pay attention to Maggie Haberman. She's very tough on Trump and has been for years. So that, I don't get that argument. These things are important because they do flesh out the stories, and books are written for a much different purpose than daily reporting, whether it's online or in a still the rarity of a paper newspaper. So I value this stuff, and I'm looking forward to reading the book. Look, I think we all have an understanding what Donald Trump is and isn't. He speaks for a lot of people in America who have been frustrated by what they saw as a breakdown of policy, a breakdown of the rule of law. That's why he's president. I don't think there's any question that's the biggest reason he's president. Now, I would argue that other than that issue, border policy, and we can get into immigration in a second, he's dropped the ball on so many other things. And Jake, I'd love to hear your take. I mean, just affordability, doesn't seem to care about it. Tariff, his stuff on tariffs has really put our economy on a line that is very, very, very dangerous when it comes to a recession. So he's done the one thing I think that people wanted, but on the other stuff, he's failed. And he's continuing to frustrate a lot of Republicans like me who wanted to see the other stuff done in the right way. Fiscal conservatism is important to a lot of us, and I don't think he demonstrated in any manner.
Yeah, so I guess as to the importance of these books, I 100% agree. You know, on the flip side, I think Jake Tapper's Original Sin is a really important piece of, you know, to your point, history. And it's interesting how you put that, Joe, because I think it's fair to say, assuming that what Tapper had in his book is accurate, and I think it is pretty well sourced, you do have like this juxtaposition between what the original reporting was. And that's the whole point of Tapper's book, is like, actually, that original reporting wasn't accurate at all. And there was a lot of people in the White House that were very intentionally covering up what was happening.
For folks who are listening, and the general notion is that the Biden administration wasn't being portrayed properly or correctly or in the way that it should have been, as real journalists are supposed to practice. But to that point, so why was that allowed to happen, do you think? Journalists just looked the other way? Journalists didn't do their job?
Well, I think it's also documented that, like, because of COVID, the Biden circle was very small and allowed to be
They cocooned and protected him.
Better word.
And those few people around him did not tell even the sort of second, third, fourth layer of people in the administration how bad it was.
But that's the whole, and I think it was a very well-written book, because the whole point is, whatever the rationale around that tight cocoon, it really didn't spill out into the open until the worst possible time, nationally televised debate.
But I think in response, it wasn't a malpractice of journalism. It was that it was a tight circle.
Yeah, if they don't have it, they can't write it, and they didn't have it.
Interesting. Well, I mean, the job of journalists is to get that information.
Sure.
Yeah, and I would argue, though, we talk about government transparency. I think if you are part of an administration, you do have a responsibility to at least alert the public to, I'm not saying every health issue, but like, there's transparency. And if that cocoon was so tight that even, you know, even friendly journalists couldn't get the intel they needed, there is a problem there. There's a breakdown in government transparency. So I think you have to lay the blame at the Biden administration.
Jake, do you think that mark on Trump's hand is just from shaking too many hands?
Look, if we're going to compare, if anything, I mean, Trump allows so much access that
I agree
you
on
can
that.
See marks on his hands,
that's true,
apparently.
That's true.
But somebody's not telling the truth.
You've seen them. Don't say apparently. You've seen the marks.
Somebody's not telling the truth. And I'll admit right away, he's out there all the time. So
he's not afraid about marks on hands.
He's not afraid of whatever this stuff is, but he certainly raises questions about the health of the President of the United States. We've got to take a break. Joe Zepecki, Jake Curtis, Kristen and Steve, point taken. A little bit of time here before we get to the bottom of our news break with, I think, Connie Weber. Yeah, Connie Weber this morning. That's right. All right. Well, how do we want to wrap this up? The book, Joe, you've read the book.
Not all of it. I mean, I'm about a third of the way through. Just one quick anecdote that was not shared ahead of time. You mentioned the tariff stuff. The haphazard, slapdash, ridiculous nature of how they implemented the tariffs should make people fall out of their chair. They're like having the meeting ahead of Liberation Day, and they realize, oh, crap, we forgot about China. And Trump just pipes up, oh, hit him with 10. Actually, no, make it 20. And that's the whole process? This is not serious. This is not the way to run a railroad, much less a global superpower.
But it is serious because it's part of the United States and that policy matters. Jake.
Well, I think I've been pretty consistent. This is, I think, something I disagree with the Trump administration on, and that is the use of protectionist measures because, frankly, it's consistent with policies that Bernie Sanders and AOC have been pushing for quite a while. I mean, what are they? It's the kind of the U-shaped political theater at this point where you have kind of the far left. And this is where, you know, people I think would call it the far right. That tariffs have not been a plank of the conservative, you know, platform for any point in American history. It's really a protectionist measure. If you want to put it in kind of a populist type philosophy, that's not conservatism. So it is a weird mashup of politics when you look at that.
I think we all agree on tariffs. Stupid.
Yeah.
And protectionist and not something we should be doing, especially as conservatives.
Now, I would say something the Trump administration has
done. You probably
done,
don't have enough time, though, because we only have.
In a positive way, is renegotiating agreements.
She's Kristen. I'm Steve. Welcome to Friday's show. I'm a little unplugged today. I got to be totally honest. I could go anywhere.
What does that mean?
I could go anywhere, so I might go off. So just be prepared.
So I asked him this morning, are you grouchy?
Not grouchy,
no.
I'm sort of in the very animated feisty is what I am.
So you're feisty, not grouchy.
No,
it is a day that ends in Y.
Yeah. Yeah, hello.
All right, so since we last met last Friday, Missy Hughes, we had our first Democratic candidate drop out of the race. Missy Hughes dropped out on Monday?
Yeah.
Monday. She was the former CEO of the state's WEDC. And she immediately endorsed Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, which had people rumoring, talking, chatting about people starting to coalesce behind Sarah Rodriguez in an attempt to hope that Fran Hong does not win the general the primary. And so we had talked potentially that there was going to be two more. Does not look like there's going to be two more dropping out yet. But also, 4 days until the fundraising deadline for this quarter, first half of the year. So I joked with Steve that a lot of people, he asked if anyone was at the governor candidates were at the event that I was at yesterday. I'm like, I'm pretty sure they're all on the phone right now trying to raise as much money as they can before the 30th. So we'll start with Joe as far as analysis from Missy dropping out, where we're at with Democrats ahead of what do we have?
45 days to go.
45 days.
About 20 until mail ballots go out. So that's like 3 weeks. Listen, Missy Hughes has a future in Wisconsin and in Democratic politics, I think. She made some really smart moves. She tried to draw contrast. This is this was a tough field for her to break out of. And so I commend her for, you know, reading the room and saying, you know what, it's not going to happen for me, and that's okay. But I have some influence to try to back somebody else and get them over the finish line. And I think there's some natural alignment between Rodriguez and Hughes. And so, you know, a good get for the Rodriguez campaign. No one else is acting like they're going anywhere. The Crowley campaign and the Brennan campaigns released new ads this week. Crowley got the endorsement of the statewide firefighters union. So we got a couple more weeks before this thing really shakes out. You were mentioning the fundraising on the 15th of July. People have to show their report card. And I would be very surprised if anyone else drops out before July 15th. Because if you're one of those candidates in that second tier now, and you look at, you know, maybe that top tier didn't raise as much money as you were afraid they were going to, maybe you stay in.
Well, you're acting like July 15th is like 2 months from now. That's
no, it's two and a half weeks from now.
So after July 15th, would you be shocked if two people dropped out and endorsed Sarah Rodriguez?
Not shocked.
What numbers?
But I'm not predicting.
What numbers do you think people should be expecting? And like, what will be too little to be, oh, yeah, this is not really viable versus wildly impressive?
If you don't have, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to spend communicating to voters in the final 2 weeks of the race, I'm not sure what you're doing.
How many people does that apply to in
what?
This group that don't have the money? Shouldn't even be in the race because don't have the money or the support.
I think.
Say names.
I've said it's a three-person race. The nominee for Democrats will be Mandela Barnes, Francesca Hong, or Sarah Rodriguez. That is alphabetical order, not a preference order.
But also, if one of the other three came out with a huge amount of money, would that change anything?
Maybe.
How likely is that?
Not very.
Yeah, I mean, the things that I've been hearing is that, in general, no one is raising huge amounts of money because most of the big donors have been, like, stayed on the sideline because they also, like, so many voters haven't necessarily made a choice yet.
Jake, you're not of the Democratic ilk, but your overview of what they got going on.
Yeah, obviously Joe is more familiar with kind of the internal machinations, but I think what's interesting is you have a lot of these candidates going to a lot of these forums and actually taking positions on policy. This is a point I made last week. IRG put out, I think, some really interesting stuff last week that has highlighted some of the positions these candidates have taken. So I'm just going to indulge me for 1 minute. If you look at, for example, increases per student, per pupil, if you can kind of scale it up, how would you pay for this? Okay, pretty basic question. I noticed some of your colleagues yesterday looking at kind of this Milwaukee utility issue have been asking some really basic questions. Well, how do you pay for these things? It's kind of an annoying little question, but if you're in local government or state government, you kind of have to answer that. Well, Crowley, Hong, and Rodriguez, again, for per pupil increases, legalizing tax marijuana. Apparently that's going to fund education in Wisconsin. Hong wants to focus on corporate taxes. Barnes, Hong, and Roy's looking at raising taxes on billionaires, ending the manufacturing and agricultural tax credit. The two biggest industries in Wisconsin, Barnes, Crowley, and Roy's, they want to end that tax credit. Roy's just straight up end parental choice in Wisconsin. Hughes, grow the economy to increase tax revenues. So the one kind of reasonable, policy position that, okay, I think everybody agrees there's at least something. Grow the economy, you're going to increase tax revenue. Hughes, the one person who supports that, is now out of the race.
It does speak to that movement.
That's your opinion that's the only reasonable solution. My question to you would be, how many new big manufacturing and agricultural companies have been attracted to Wisconsin since the MANAG tax credit went into effect?
Well, who's been governor the last two terms?
I mean, with the Republican legislature. But this has been around for 15 years, right? Scott Walker did it.
And so also,
if there's a story to tell here that the MANAG tax credit was anything other than a handout to big business who supported Scott Walker and Republicans for years, then let's hear it. But I haven't heard it in 15 years. So that's your opinion. It's an unreasonable take. But let's have the debate.
Yeah.
And that's what they're doing.
Again, but I think if there was one policy position on this list that you could probably pull.
That conservatives would find reasonable.
No, moderates.
You don't think growing the economy to increase tax revenue is a good policy position?
Oh, I love it.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean the other ones are not serious.
No, but my point was the only one that Hughes supports is the one that probably gets the widest bipartisan support, and she is now out of the race.
That's a great point.
This is why you need to join me in jungle primaries and top twos, and then we can stop going to the far right and far left in both primaries.
And what is your answer to that? Did you answer last time when I asked you why you don't like jungle primaries?
I'm just waiting for somebody to say democratic socialism is the answer for everything.
I
think we're getting to that next.
Oh, yeah, we're going to get to that. 1043, 620 WTMJ, point taken.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry, Steve Scafidi, as always, Jake Curtis, in for Bill McCashin, Joseph Pecky. All right, so we've touched on it a fair amount this week, but the big news politically, nationally, was the sweep of Zohran Mamdani's endorsements in New York.
Why is that big news?
Because I think it highlights the infighting or the
yeah, in maybe, the bluest maybe, city in the world.
Yeah.
That is unlike any other city in the world.
But I think it also highlights the fact that there is right now a debate going on within the Democratic Party of where they stand, what the policies are, how far to the left, as Jake is going to point out, versus moderate, the party wants to be. And I think it also points to a lack of, there is no central leader right now, right? And so I think we're feeling some of that as far as a, across the board, what the message of Democrats is.
I just think this is nonsense. Because everybody wants to talk about three races in New York City, which might as well be Venus. Nobody wants to talk about the DSA candidates that got curb stomped up north New York. They don't want to talk about the DSA candidates that lost in Utah or Maryland. So what are we doing here? This is preposterous.
It's not a great idea.
It's also relevant because one of the leading candidates for governor in Wisconsin is a self-identifying Democratic socialist. So I don't think it's an absurd thing to talk about the differences of what they are running on as they self-identify versus the rest of the Democrats.
But like, to pretend this is the biggest story in America and how much Republicans want this to be a thing is hilarious. So, Jake, take it away, brother.
Wait, it's not Republic. We didn't create this.
But Republicans want to make these knuckleheads in New York City the poster child of the Democratic Party.
Any party in this country wants the other party to look stupid as much as possible. In fact, that these knuckleheads picked socialists and put it in their name suggests they're not the smartest people in the world, maybe.
And maybe it'll work, but it worked so well with Ilhan Omar and AOC and the squad. That didn't work.
God.
They can't run on what they actually believe in, so they've got new boogie people.
I will take this seriously if Fran Hong wins the primary.
Exactly.
Then it's serious.
There's not been a single statewide race in America where a Democratic socialist has won anything yet.
So what are we doing? At that point, you're just an influencer on social media, basically.
Or a troll, like this DAC woman.
Sorry, and she's a nice person.
DAC, the craziest of the three.
Okay.
Oh, in New York. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you got your. Let's get Jake's mic on.
A lot of protest from Joe because I think he knows there's a problem right now.
Of course he does.
I know you want to minimize it. So as of June 2026, 35 candidates backed by the Democratic Socialist of America have advanced from their primaries or were unopposed in the 2026 cycle. So to say that this is just some like far fringe, it may not be the majority, Joe, but like there is a significant influence now from the Democratic Socialist of America Party within the Democratic Party, which, let's face it, you and I are the same age. Growing up, I mean, the days of Bill Clinton talking about, you know, balanced budgets and welfare reform and immigration and border security, that's a joke at this point because I'm not sure there's a single Democrat right now that of influence that actually would support essentially what was the Clinton platform. And that was 30 years ago. We're not talking about 150 years ago. And right now you have 35 candidates across the country. Yes, in probably blue cities. But as Kristen pointed out, you have, I would argue right now, if the primary were held today, and I know you're going to object because you probably have all sorts of insiders listening. If the primary were held today, Hong would win the primary. And that is a problem for Democrats in Wisconsin.
I don't believe that.
One final point, Joe.
I think it's a problem. I don't think she would win.
One final point. I don't think we should be minimizing what this stands for. I actually just pulled up the DSA platform. I mean, they actually talk about controlling the means of production. I mean, read Hayek's Road to Serfdom. Like, this is a problem historically. We're not talking about, like, marginal tax rates here. We're talking about government control of industry.
But now you are talking about a fraction of a fraction, and don't come at me with controlling private industry when your president, the Republican president, demanding stakes in U.S. companies.
And we've both been on record saying we don't like that.
So should we talk about like democratic socialism versus white nationalism or Christian nationalism? Because you know what? We all live in a society where there are socialist things that we benefit from, like, oh, I don't know, roads or law enforcement or the United States military, where we all contribute to something that private industry cannot do. So why are we saying DSA
is from actually
is
government
scarier.
Controlling
let
all means Christian of production,
nationalism,
Joe, which
break,
is the
we still
platform
have another
of the
break.
DSA.
Think about this during a break. If Fran Hong wins, How has all of these arguments changed after the break? All right, we've got about a minute and a half left. Jake, if Francesca Hong wins the primary, what's the Republicans and Tom Tiffany's response to that in that campaign?
Well, I think it's pretty easy, and frankly, he's already kind of doing it by focusing, I think, on some of these important policies. I mean, you have – that's why these forums are pretty important. You know, everybody loves to follow the politics and the money, and yes, that obviously is important. Infrastructure is important. But, like, what a candidate actually thinks on important issues, I don't know. I think that's kind of important in an election. And so you have these forums. They're very interesting. You look at something like Act 10, school choice. Taxes, right? We're on the record. We think we should eliminate the income tax because that'll make us more competitive with states like Tennessee and New Hampshire and Florida and Texas. The Democrats are on record, right, proposing an 18% additional income tax bracket. Those are real debates. I think it'd be good for the state as opposed to talking about personalities and things like that. Let's talk about, like, should we have zero income tax or should we add another 18% bracket? And we were talking off air, right? If you're a small business owner, small business meaning, you know, $50 million, you know, 100 employees, and you're in S Corps, so you're a pass through, and you have an 18% additional income tax, where are you going? You're going to Tennessee. Like, you are. And that's going to have an impact on the Wisconsin economy. So I think this is an important debate. Let's actually talk about the issues. If we overturn Act 10, what's going to happen? Well, all your local units of government are going to have, 10-15% increase.
The fiscal cliff gets 10 times worse for school.
They're so flush with cash right now. If Francesca Hong wins the nomination, she's going to run a campaign, I believe, or should, targeted towards the people we talked about last week, which are the segment of voters who, in 2016, their first choice and their second choice were Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders. There is anger out there that the system is not working.
I mean, truly.
I don't know, but we know that they're out there.
Right.
I mean, Jazz is waving in the background. Maybe she's one of them. So they're out there. You have, because of negative polarization, you have so many Republicans who are going to vote for Republican, whoever it is. You have so many Democrats who are going to vote for Democrat, no matter who it is. And now you have that vanishingly small middle, the 100,000 to 200,000 folks. So is France call for a moratorium on AI data centers and, you know, some radical policy ideas enough to get them out? I don't know. But that's the campaign she would have to run.
All right. Lots to get to in the next half hour, including America 250, which is coming up pretty soon. Pretty quick. News is next.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bryan.
Fiery. Everyone's a little fiery and feisty. Except me. I feel like I'm the most subdued today of the four people.
That's because you're
room.
A Democrat and socialist. Go. Ignore my joke.
All right. Like we said earlier, this week's podcast for Steve and I, we were talking about America 250. We're going to talk about it again with Bill and Joe next week. But Jake, you had suggested, because MU poll had some polling on...
And a new Gallup poll.
Had some polling about people's feelings about the upcoming birthday. And kind of the top headline was, few Americans have heard or read about the country's upcoming 250th anniversary. And... of the two parties, Republicans are more likely to be interested in the event. What were some of the things that you thought more interesting about this?
So I can talk now? I don't want to talk over people. Apparently, a texter thought I was talking over people.
Yes.
Okay, my turn. yeah, so 250th anniversary, this polling, I can honestly say, was, I think, shocking to me. I think, Steve, you and I were talking before we started. 26%, so this is an NMU poll, 1,500 adults found only 26% of Americans surveyed have read or heard a lot about the United States semi-quincentennial 250th anniversary coming up on July 4th. 26%. I mean, I don't know, like, you have to be living, and maybe this is just the nature of news, what we read. I feel like it's been covered in mainstream media. It's all over social media. I mean, heck, I picked up my new Brewers hat, or, you know, it was a gift for Father's Day, 250th anniversary. I don't know how you don't know this. Like, truly, how do you not understand that, hey, 1776, pretty big year. Do the math. That's about 250 years ago.
How was the question framed? I didn't look at, like, the actual details of this
poll. To me, what this is a survey about people's news consumption habits. Right? Like, when you say, have you heard a lot about or a little about, and you know the way the algorithms work. Right? And it's not just on social media.
It's on billboards.
Sure.
It's on TV. Social media.
I don't. Yes, I am aware of what has been happening with America 250. I want to be really clear. I'm one of those crazy people who, like, when my side lost the election of 2024, I went, damn it. This guy who I don't like is going to be president of the United States for the 250th celebration. That makes me a very small minority who is thinking that far ahead, right? But, like, they also, they're not getting the stars. They've had to scale down some of the stuff in D.C. He's made such a hash of the mall. And, like, I think if you ask people how many had heard about the UFC fight, maybe that would have been more than 26%. But it's like, I don't know. There's not 2 million people going to D.C. for a celebration.
Well, I think those are two different points, right? You can just be a functioning member of society.
And know that we're 250 years old.
And know that we're 250 years old, right? We celebrate 1776. I mean, heck, it's literally like established, 1776.
But here's what I'd say.
How do you not know?
But what percentage of people do you think know that our Independence Day should be July 2nd?
Probably very few.
Probably fewer than 26%.
You actually have to crack a history book, but that's not what they're polling. It's just literally, do you know if this is a 250th anniversary? Are you interested? And as to Kristen's point, I think there is a political point here. Among Republicans, 76% said they were fairly interested, compared to 50% of independents and 43% of Democrats.
So my question is, had it been flipped, had Kamala Harris won and she'd been president right now, do you think that number would be flipped as far as excitement or enthusiasm for the 250th?
I don't know, but I think it's possible, and I think that is a sad indictment of the country.
I totally agree with that. Sad as far as partisanship and polarization.
That you can appreciate the founding of this country, the principles upon which it was, started. Yes, flawed as they may be, we improved upon that. We continue to get better. I mean, this is, I think, a fundamental problem. I think I've mentioned this before, there's Pew Research numbers. When you look at, like, are you proud to be an American? The partisan split on there is really disappointing, but even the overall numbers are not encouraging. Like, this is a problem. Set the partisanship aside and just look at the founding principles. But I do think the political point would be, like, to go back to what we talked about earlier. Are there elements, and maybe there's an element within the Republican Party as well, but I think especially in the Democratic Party, like, is there an element where they look back at 1776 and say, this is wrong and we need to change it? You look at the various projects that may be out there. I think it's a question.
I would say that one of the things these polls, Pew, MU in the state of Wisconsin, would reflect is when people don't like something or the look or appearance of something, and I'm talking about the conduct, not just the president, Congress, pick an elected official, they look away. They ignore it. They focus on local. This is actually my grab bag, so I'll expand on the conversation, because local is where we celebrate 250, not in, well, I could care less about Washington, D.C. on that day. I celebrate it in Oak Creek or Cudahy later. That's where those parties, that celebration should happen. That's what matters. And I'm gonna do Joe Biden might say something nice, which might surprise you, Jake, for a different reason than you might think. But when I met him, he always said to me, and I met him a couple dozen times throughout my career as mayor and U.S. Conference of Mayors and stuff, everything important happens locally. That's a big statement to make.
You're the only person in this room who was alive in 1976.
Thank you for that.
When we celebrated 200, do you remember difference?
Yeah,
right?
A little bit.
Like, because I'm actually also reading a book about that 200th, which turned out to be, like, corrupt as hell. Richard Nixon, like, promised all this money to Philadelphia to make them the home base as opposed to Washington, D.C. Made all these promises, got a Democratic mayor to endorse him, won 49 states in 1972, and then pulled all the money back and went back on the deal. Right? So, like, I don't know. How many Americans could tell you that Philadelphia was the home base of America 200 versus it's the Great American State Fair 250? Probably not that many.
Yeah, the Philadelphia point is amazing because most people don't know that's where the government was created.
Right. They just think Washington, D.C. Go to a barbecue. Think about what this country means to you. Be grateful that we live in the greatest country in the world.
Stop stealing my grab bag, please. Break. Point taken.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You keep saying your side is better. It's time to
say something nice
about the other side of the political aisle on Point Taken.
Come on, people now.
Always a feel-good segment here on the Friday edition of Point Taken, and while our two panelists are looking. And I'll admit, I put it in my comments in Kristen's fabulous outline, if I had to pick an elected, they're all off. Congress has taken vacations, and Wisconsin State Legislature, they've been off for months already, right?
They've been off since April? Working maybe end of March?
Working, I'm air quoting, working in their districts. Yeah, right. Wink, wink, nod, nod. So I'm going to choose President Joe Biden, not for anything he did in office. What he's done since. I'm not criticizing or praising. I don't want to get into that. But since he has been out of office, I think he's lived his life with dignity. I love the fact that he just shows up on random trains. He's just riding like a regular dude. I love that about a president. That's like awesome. And he doesn't feel the need to make freaking headlines every day and saying something stupid about the other party or whatever. He just lives his damn life. And whatever you think about his policies or his president or his presidency or his vice presidency, he showed up and he did the job. And again, no politician is perfect. We know that. We live that reality every day. But someone who I think shows the way it can be done in a respectful, dignified way, we need more of that in this country. Joe Biden, my pick. Joe.
Senator Bill Cassidy is my say something nice this week. Finally, to President Trump's face, somebody said the quiet part out loud, which is you did not sell this Iran conflict to the American people. You have not achieved any of the strategic objectives you outlined. What the hell is going on? And from there, things apparently devolved. They got into a yelling match. But I think it's really important that Republicans communicate to this president what is happening and why people are frustrated, because I don't think the people around him in the White House are doing enough of that. So good on you, Bill Cassidy.
All right. Jake Curtis.
I guess I'm going to cheat here and basically use somebody I already talked about. I mean, if you look at the...
You talk about Rahm Emanuel like again?
No, I'm not going to use that for a third time. Hey, the guy keeps writing good Wall Street Journal op-eds. What am I supposed to do about that?
Called running for president.
Missy Hughes, I think, was a reasonable voice, as I articulated earlier, in the Dem primary. And she took, I think, some reasonable position. Obviously, I didn't agree with her on everything. In fact, there was probably a lot of things I disagreed with her on. But like I mentioned earlier, how are you going to improve school funding? Grow the economy. Like, that's a pretty reasonable position. So I think it's a loss that there was a somewhat reasonable voice in that primary. It'll be interesting to see if Rodriguez kind of takes the torch. We'll see. Or we're going to just go straight DSA.
And before Kristen jumps in, Missy, if you're listening, or one of your people that you know that helped you on your campaign, love to have you on as someone who's now stepped out of the campaign.
Her phone number. You want me to text her?
Yeah, let's get that going, because I'd love to hear her take on all this stuff, including what the both of our guys said about her. Kristen.
Mine is local. So I know that I think we've talked about it on the air that I emceed a event yesterday for High Speed Rail, which will also be my grab bag. But it was a great group of people, and I moderated the panel, and on that panel was Jeff Stone, who I had not met before, but a longtime Republican in the assembly from the Greenfield Greendale area. He said hi to you. He's a listener, so maybe
known him
he's
a long
listening
time,
right now.
20 years.
But he now works as a vice president at Kapoor. And I think when he was in the state assembly, the breed of Republican was maybe different than the breed of Republican we have today. And we didn't talk about politics, but what he did talk about, which really resonated with me, I think people are very used to me or people like me talking about collectivism and community and doing things for the greater good for people that you don't always know. And obviously we're talking about high speed rail and building things that give people more options for transportation than just their car. And Jeff said something, I forgot whose question he was answering, but he spoke to community. He goes, you know, I think we celebrate our liberty, we celebrate our freedom, but sometimes the individualism has gone too far, and we've lost sight of what we can do when we focus on community and build things for each other. And it was just very refreshing to hear someone who, with his political background, you know, what he looks like, how old he is and everything, like also proselytize that message. And so, Jeff, if you're listening, you spoke to me in that moment.
Oh, that's cool. And I heard it was a great event. Then you're going to talk about it in your...
I'll talk about it in the grab bag, yeah.
All right. Joe Zepecki, Jake Curtis, Kristen Bryce, Steve Scafidi on the Friday edition of Point Taken. We'll wrap it up with the grab bag after this.
All right. Since we got most of the politics out of our systems, let's finish up with some grab bags.
All right, let's not waste any time. Joe Zepecki, grab bag.
Some very special ladies in the studio with me. Oh, love yes. My wife and her best friends and family who are here this week.
Welcome.
Lots we didn't get to. I want to get to it maybe next week or the week after that. This week, the Supreme Court made three huge decisions, right? From my standpoint, they made it easier for people to take guns into grocery stores. Maybe we should have talked through that. They overturned a 36-year-old bipartisan law around asylum seeking, and they made it harder to sue corporations that are potentially poisoning people. The Supreme Court matters, and elections matter because the Supreme Court matters. We got to talk about that.
Jake Curtis.
Congress matters, too.
Yeah.
So let's
do your damn jobs, basically, right?
Well, right.
All right, what do you got?
Fix everything. So sorry if I'm going to steal your thunder, Steve, but I mean, we are heading into apparently a week that 26% of Americans were like really tracking. I still cannot get over that number. Last summer, my family and I had the opportunity for a guard thing to go out to Boston for a few weeks. And I mean, it's an amazing city. It really brought to life like what the year 1776, 1775, if you're actually into history and Lexington and Concord. But if you're a history buff, great, and you're part of the 26%. I guess if you're not, take some time to look back at the founding of this country, what it really meant, what the founders went through. Many of them either were killed or died penniless. Like, they actually gave kind of that last full measure of devotion to found this country. And I think it's worth understanding if you don't. And if you do, let's celebrate it. This is an amazing country. We are an exceptional country. We have many flaws. But I think it's worth celebrating that after 250 years, we're still standing and still the most exceptional country on this planet.
You got music, too. Kristen Bry.
Shout out to High Speed Rail Alliance yesterday and the event that they asked me to moderate. I have gotten the chance to live in places that had comprehensive transportation, living in the Bay Area with Caltrain and BART and bus systems, living in New York with a subway. And it was inspiring to think about what is possible. It's frustrating sometimes when I think that it gets shut down when we try to think big about things. But hearing some of the stories as far as what more options for transportation can do for people, for their economic possibilities, hearing stories yesterday about people who can't go get cancer treatments because they can't get out to Economowoc. Like, having more options for transportation is good for everyone. It is certainly the like definition of a rising tide raises all boats. And I'm hoping that yesterday was the start of more coalitions being built, because this is something that could help a lot of people. And I will also shout out that Governor Evers did apply for new funding yesterday to expand passenger rail. And so let's hope this doesn't have to be a partisan thing and that people can actually recognize that it's a good thing for everyone.
And shout out to you for doing all those outside events, because I know your schedule is a nightmarish schedule with your daughter and your other job and this job and all the other.
Or it's a dream. Or it's something that I dream. Because I say yes to things and I enjoy doing them.
Well, you're good at them, so that's the thing. Jake did steal my thunder a little bit, but as a former elected who rode in parades and a quick story, I don't know if I ever told this story. So my first fireworks as mayor, had to cancel them mid fireworks because we lit a field on fire. So that was my initial legacy as mayor. So I did a lot after that to change that legacy, which I think worked out okay. But as somebody who celebrates the local part of the story, I mentioned it when we were talking about this before, that's where the rubber meets the road. That's the cool part of being an American. You can go to the parades, you can, and be nice to your neighbors too, by the way, and be safe with the fireworks. But I've softened on fireworks. Have fun with them. Enjoy the day, celebrate the country, and celebrate the freedoms we have. That's the cool thing about living in this country. And I love the fact that we're 250 years old. And I hope, and we talked about this yesterday, the next 250 are as amazing as, not that they're perfect, as the first 250 were. All right, real quick.
Have you watched the PBS America 250 thing?
I have not.
Apparently it's great. And it is like truly bipartisan.
I will do that based on your recommendation. Jake Curtis, thanks for filling in.
I actually heard of that one.
Less 13%. Than 26? Yeah. Half of the people have heard of the.
All right. Jake Curtis, thanks for filling in for Bill McCasha. I think we got Bill back, and then aren't you going on vacation or something?
Well, we're doing a podcast next week, so we're not all back. No, and then you're back gone on the 10th, so we're not all together until like the 17th. Welcome back to Point Taken. Half hour before we get to the weekend. So last fall, I know we talked about it some on this show. We've touched on it a little bit because there hasn't been a ton of movement, but there was it was passed federally to roll back what had originally been in the 2018 Farm Bill, which was this loophole for hemp to be grown. And there was all of these businesses over the last now 7-8 years that have grown and have a lot of different products. And there's a lot that work very ethically and want more regulations. And there's some that don't. And in Wisconsin specifically, while we don't even have medical marijuana, we have had this loophole for Delta 8. And both at the state level and at the federal level, there's a lot of what do we do next? And if nothing happens at the federal level, a lot of these companies that have grown over the last almost a decade will be out of business. That includes Kelly's Greens, and Aaron Kelly, who is the owner of Kelly's Greens, is here. And we've touched base a fair amount of times. I run into you at different festivals and stuff when you have your tent up. You're having an event on Monday called Save Hemp. But before we talk about the event, let's talk about what the status is of like lobbying and both at the state level or at the federal level, getting any legislation passed prior to the ban going into effect.
Yes. So we really, the cannabis industry is really looking for the state of Wisconsin to put a plan in place to protect this industry, our consumers and the farmers. And we've been reaching out for some time. But without a plan from the state, all of these businesses will close and there will be no legal access to any hemp-derived products here in Wisconsin. None at all. And so it's a big deal for Wisconsin because we don't have any other access to legal cannabis. So it would leave Wisconsin residents with no sleep gummies, no cannabis products for pain, no hemp gummies for sleep. I mean, it's a devastating ban, and we would be moving backwards.
How did we get to this place that we're not able to do what most people think is just the basic right to be able to access these products?
I mean, I think there's a lot of confusion. The 2018 Farm Bill allowed this industry to be created legal and federally. And so the state didn't put the plan in place. And so there's just kind of this back and forth. The state failed to put the plan in place. And now because it's an election year, we're hearing from lawmakers that they won't be able to do anything until January of 2027. And really, that's how we got to the Save Hemp rally, because it is hard to understand how we can't take action on an industry that is 3,500 employees in Wisconsin, $700 million. And let's be honest, right? We have never lived in a world without hemp or cannabis products, and we never will. And so in order to move forward, we need to regulate these to protect kids and our community. And that's what we're asking for.
So there's two levels of this, because is there any momentum for altering what's been done federally? This was Mitch McConnell. I forgot, what bill did it get slipped into?
So he slipped it into the bill to turn the government back on in November.
That's what it was. Okay.
So it never was discussed in agricultural appropriations. It never went through any proper channels. It became law as soon as that bill was signed, and that's the problem.
And so, but there was conversation that it wasn't going to be for another year. So this happens. The ban gets in place in November, but there was talk of lobbying at the federal level to have more discussion because of like widening what the ban is, right? Because it's like some arbitrary amount.
Yes.
That is like even in balms that those would get banned.
That's
so
right.
Is there any momentum at the federal level for them to change anything before the ban would go into place?
So it had been very quiet, and that's why we moved forward with the Save Hemp rally. But just 2 days ago, then we hear that the White House is specifically asking Congress to fix the hemp ban. And not only are they sending out a request, but they're specifically asking for it to be modeled after Andy Barr's regulations or a 2-year extension.
So this administration is asking for that.
That's right.
Yes, which might surprise some people, I guess.
Yes, it's this administration who put the ban into place, and
yeah,
this administration who is asking for it to be turned over now, because, I mean,
I'm sure they're hearing about it.
Yes, these products are everywhere. They're mainstream, and taking these products away is going to be a big deal.
Well, and that doesn't get away from the fact, because I've written about this before, is that there is this weird landscape in Wisconsin where we don't have medicinal marijuana or recreational marijuana, but then there was nothing passed for Delta 8 and Delta 9 and for the hemp law. And so you have people who are selling to underage. You have gummies that are not regulated. You have,
yes,
gummies that are like created. I know John Dietrich's written about this. And people like you and different very responsible hemp cannabis store owners have been asking for regulation at the state level for age limits, for like quality control. And so is that what you're basically asking for now? Is that at,
yes,
the state level, we need to move that protects us no matter what the federal government does?
100%. So we can't rely on the federal government to protect us in this industry. And we really are asking Wisconsin to protect this industry. And let's keep that revenue right here in Wisconsin. And so we're asking our lawmakers to put in plan in place that has age limits. So you can only sell products to people that are 21 up. You have to third-party test your products. You have truth in marketing. And so these are things that are industry standard, and Kelly's Greens and lots of other businesses here in Wisconsin have already been doing. And so we want, and we've been reaching out to lawmakers. I mean, I looked back. I've been reaching out to lawmakers here in Wisconsin since 2023 and asking for regulation, asking to lead it, asking to write it, and we just haven't been able to get anywhere.
What? From Democrats or Republicans?
So in February, there was two Republican-sponsored bills that were being discussed. One was Assembly Bill 606 by Representative Swearingen, the former president of the Tavern League, and that would have been an exclusive takeover in ownership of all hemp-derived products that would have to be distributed through their three-tiered distribution network. And then Patrick Teston, it was my understanding, he didn't really like 606, and he didn't like that exclusive control that the Tavern League would gain. And so Patrick Teston put together Senate Bill 682, which I stood firmly behind, which would protect the consumers and the businesses and keep this industry alive. But the Republicans weren't able to get it over the line because of infighting within their own party.
I mean, you own a store and an online, you can buy things online. And if you want to check it out, it's kellygreens.com. A great website, by the way.
Thank you.
So I imagine I hear a lot from farmers, growers. I imagine the growers of these products are out of their minds because they're already in a tenuous situation. We've talked a lot about, you know, the issues with the tariffs and all the impacts of the energy prices. They cannot be happy about this either.
No. And when you think, you know, it's like hemp is a big deal here in Wisconsin. We're number six in this country from a hemp production basis. And so it's huge. It's a cash crop. It grows easily here. And we have such an opportunity to be able to take this one step further instead of taking this away from our farmers and hurting our economy.
So in the likelihood of any Wisconsin politicians, like you said, they're all campaigning right now, right? Like they're not in session. So in the case that the ban goes into place, we don't know if it will happen. Nothing. So like, would you basically be out of business until they pass something in the next session? They being Wisconsin lawmakers in the next session?
Yes.
And thinking that there's a governor who is going to sign it?
Yes. We would be completely out of business November 12th. There would be no access to these products. And so the ask is take action now, Wisconsin. Work together with whoever wins the election in the fall, the current administration. Take a proactive approach and put a strategy together so we're not getting to the table on January 4th and beginning these conversations. It's far too important to ignore.
Tell us about the rally on Monday?
Yes, Monday, June 29th from 5:30 to 7:30. We've invited red and blue because the bottom line is this is not about red or blue. This is about the green for economy right here in Wisconsin. And so we've invited everybody to come. It is not going to be a stuffy political event. It is a Kelly's Greens event. We're going to have some fun. We've got Cosina Filipina coming. Enjoy ice cream. We're going to have a party. And we are asking our lawmakers to give this industry some attention because we're not going away and we're not doing anything wrong and we're not about to act like it.
Very nice to meet you, Aaron Kelly from Kelly's Greens, kellygreens.com. Check out the website. It's really cool. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
Absolutely. We'll take a break. And then Week in Review, sponsored by Outdoor Living Unlimited, after this. It's been 1 week since you looked at me. Cocked your head to the sides and I'm angry. Every Friday, this time of the program, as we get ready for the weekend, we do the Week in Review. This week, Giannis gets traded, a contentious push for public utilities. Missy Hughes drops out and more. It's the Week in Review brought to you by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
What we do here is go back.
Really civil, played at Summerfest. How was it on the big stage, Isaac?
It was incredible.
You can now say you've played the world's largest music festival.
Well, unfortunately, a Father's Day shooting out of Delafield, the man shooting his father.
He shot his father three times in the abdomen with his gun. The gun is currently next to him on the ground.
I want to give you a chance to talk about Alan Greenspan, passed away at the age of 100, American economist, former chair of the Federal Reserve.
He was this libertarian of financial theory, and he thought that it would self-correct. Now, it did. It's not probably the way we wanted it back in the Y2K burst.
So you've probably noticed gas prices dropping, and rather dramatically over the last 5 weeks.
Is there a risk here that drivers are enjoying a temporary break before another jump?
Well, I mean, there's always that possibility. The coast is anything but clear.
We are so excited to be joined in the studio by Miss Wisconsin, Jordan Butler. My gosh, congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
The Bucks traded Giannis Antetokounmpo and also the mayor, Bobby Portis, to the Miami Heat.
You know, it wasn't going to last forever anyway. We've been through a lot as fans, so I think we need another 24 hours to process all of this, at least.
It kind of feels like we finally ripped the Band-Aid off.
The Bucks received a heck of a lot of compensation for Giannis. They've got picks going into the 2030s. Who knows who those players might be?
My wonder is Hero. So that's the name that really jumps out to me. He was a legend here in the state of Wisconsin. But do you believe he will ever suit up for the Milwaukee Bucks?
He dealt with a bunch of injuries, missed a lot of games. He'd probably shift more likely towards unlikely.
Eventually that mural is going to come down, and it's going to come down sooner than later, so...
They are going to keep this mural.
I heard that the artist has already agreed to transform that into a mural for Tyler Hero.
Now we're just purely speculating.
A few moments later.
With the 10th pick, the Milwaukee Bucks select Braden Burries from the University of Arizona.
Can't wait to get out there, get to work. I'm super excited to get out there to Milwaukee.
Because you get people like you that is stand for justice. That's why I'm back.
Leader of the Islamic Society of Milwaukee after he was released from custody in ICE detention. So now it'll be interesting to see what happens starting today with this immigration case.
Congress actually got the votes for the War Powers Act, but it almost certainly will not stop the war.
Some Republicans are saying to the president, you can't just do whatever the hell you want, because this president just thinks you can do whatever you want.
President Trump was scheduled to sign a bipartisan housing bill today in front of members of Congress, but it never happened.
He decided not to come to the Capitol to sign the housing bill that was bipartisan. He said he's not going to do so until the Senate passes something called the Save America Act.
You have to ask Dr. Dave about the parallel parking story.
All of a sudden I hear, you got it! I turn around and there's this big guy doing the arm wave, and Giannis goes, you cheer me at the game, I'll cheer you when you're parking.
We are part of the record.
When I woke up this morning and turned on the radio, WTMJ was laughing about this very hearing.
I don't know if laughing is fair. I mean, you called it a terrible idea, but that's different than laughing.
It's laughable.
I don't think anybody likes paying more for their energy. You're not going to make it cheaper. And who says that the city or county is going to do a better job than We Energy is providing power to the citizens of Milwaukee?
A new festival that'll take over the grounds. I am looking forward to it because it combines things that I like. Food, wine, music, and a lake.
Once you're in the grounds, it's choose your own adventure. We're not forcing you to do anything, eat anything.
What does it mean that Missy Hughes is out of the race for governor?
I think anytime you can get an endorsement from another candidate is good. I just don't know if it brings more people into her lane to help her.
Everybody is invited to the tailgate-themed party to celebrate the completion of the Bob Uecker mural.
What a week, eh?
What a week.
Uh-huh. Ditto. Cosine. So, on that note...
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
All right. I would not be a good wife if I did not give a shout out to my husband. And for all of our card collectors.
Me included.
You included. He has another card show this weekend at the Fiserv this time.
Because he's really good at it and they're great events.
And so it starts today at 2. And so it's the WisconsinCardShow.com if you want to get more information on it and see who will be there signing autographs. I think the Miz is going to be there again. I know they was there last time.
That's right.
But they have a whole bunch of athletes coming to sign whatever you want them to sign. My mom was asking that. She's like, well, can I have them sign anything? And I was like, yeah, I think that's the point. You just pay and you can sign a shirt, sign a card, sign a ball.
I used to do that when I was a lot younger and I collected it, and it's a great way to meet these people.
Yeah.
They're kind of fun.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And so, WisconsinCardShow.com starts today, goes through 4 p.m. on Sunday.
All right. Great week of shows.
As always.
Check out that newsletter Sunday morning. Text extra to get it, EXTRA. Please sign up for it. We'll see you on Monday. News is next.